This is Infidel One. Offending Coyote Down. Offending Coyote Down.
Roger that.
Welcome to Trappin' Radio. We're proud, organic, free-range, wild fur farmers of North America.
Let me tell you a little story about how I was raised. Every day work, every day pray. God, family, friends, yeah, everybody sins. A winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. Help folks in need, don't fall for greed. A jealous man is weak, so think before you speak. If you love them, let them know. If you hate, let it go. Fast can be fun, but sometimes you need slow. God is all good, the devil is so real. So listen up, y'all, cause this is how I feel.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got none. Except for the good Lord up above. I answer to no one.
Now let's cover our sponsors. They do a lot to help support Trappin' Radio. So I'm asking you guys out there and gals to help support our sponsors as they keep Trappin' Radio on the air. First sponsors, Oki Cable and Trap Supply. Jeb's the owner of this. He's out of Oklahoma. Super guy. You'll not meet anybody nicer. It's somebody you're going to want to deal with. You can reach him at oktrapsupply.com. You can give Jeb a call at 918-429-4648. Not only does he do trap supply guys, he's a fur buyer, so if you're around the Oklahoma or surrounding states, give him a call with your fur. When you need stuff, give him a call and he'll get it out to you as soon as he can. Our second sponsor is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. Everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Guys, if you're into trapping fur, hunting fur, chasing fur with dogs, you're not going to be able to think of hardly anything that you can't get from F&T. You can reach them at fntpost.com. You can also give them a call at 989-727-8727. Whatever you want, F&T's got it. Blue Ridge Outdoor Supplies. Scott Payne is the owner of this business. He's in Elkton, Virginia. He also has a lure line, Mountain Rebel Lures and Baits. He's got a great coyote trapping video. He's also a fur buyer in Virginia. Anything that you're looking for and your trapping needs, give Scott a call and he'll get it right out to you. Wildlife Control Supplies, proven solutions for wildlife control, delivering value, expertise, and products to the wildlife individual. If you're an ADC business, control business, even fur trapping, you need to look at these guys' website. Top-notch company, have everything you would want, even the odd stuff that ADC guys are looking for. You can reach them at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. You can give them a call at 877-684-7262. International number is 860-844-0101. If you're a wildlife control professional, you need to have Wildlife Control Supplies as one of your favorites on your computer or your phone, because when you come across something that you need specialized equipment, Alan will get it right out to you.
Now let's go trapping.
See, I'm a flag flying, Bible toting son of a gun. Yeah, I'm hell on the heart, just a rebel on the run. Scared, don't know it. Fear, don't feel it. The truth is the light. Sometimes you gotta fight. Good beats bad, right beats wrong. I'm a barroom preacher and this is my song. I'm climbing for the top, representing for the country. I'm the people's champ, right out to dig. Shotgun toter, Republican voter, Hank Jr. supporter, let's protect our border. To hell with anyone who don't believe in the USA, cause this is what I say.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got...
Okay, I'm back with Chip. This is the second part of a radio show, and kind of long-winded about some stuff, but if you go back and listen next week, you're going to hear a lot of stuff about corn and tractors and dirt and everything else. and I'm talking about a business, and the reason I'm doing it, this is the way if you're going to be an entrepreneur, you got to look at anything that you're going to be looking at. And we're going to talk about, I think you're kind of getting the gist now of where I'm wanting to go. So the main point of where I think deer management ought to go is a trapper already has skills as a trapper. And in my opinion, like I said last week, I think a trapper's better off in his, you know, trappy fuzziness to not be trapping 12 months out of the year, but give yourself a break and do something else. And if you have a way to get to the wealthy landowners and they already trust you, they're going to let you trap and they're going to pay you for it. So fur trapping turns into control trapping, but it's really fur trapping. You know, seriously, right. But you're getting paid, so it's a good deal. And the, all this is a circle that we're building revenue streams from this. And it, just like I said about the tax guy last week, that could be a totally different revenue stream inside this business model.
One little note I had jotted down about that, and you kind of preface this whole thing with entrepreneurs, and what's the one thing that I've always believed that entrepreneurs have in common? They make money by helping other people.
Absolutely.
And that, and you just hit the nail on the head on one when last week when we the last week's radio show, when you said, you know, what if I could show a guy how he could save 20% of a cost in depreciation value, or, and that absolutely is real, and so many guys just can't, don't know to take advantage of that. So part of your service is you're helping someone. You're making money by helping someone, and that's one thing that's common thread through just about any entrepreneur I know.
Well, the part we're getting ready to get into is permaculture, and the reason I want to talk about that, I listen to a guy that's got a podcast called The Survival Podcast, and he's the only guy, he's the one that got me interested in permaculture. He uses that as business practices, which when he first said that, you know, I thought he was drinking way too much, you know, apple cider or something, because it didn't make a whole lot of sense. But permaculture is a design practice that is that uses several tools inside of using design, which we're getting ready to go over several of those. It's going to help somebody make a whole lot of money on their deer management. But there's ethics in permaculture that seem weird, especially to people that don't understand the principle you just said. And in permaculture, there's three. And as long as you abide by these three, you really can't screw nothing up. And one of them is care of the earth, which a trapper absolutely does. Care of people, which a trapper absolutely does. In return of surplus, if you're teaching someone else how to trap or you're helping a landowner grow more deer, you're putting surplus back in, the, if you want to call it a circle or whatever you want to call it. And if you build a business based off those principles, I promise you things work. Because it's whatever someone believes in religiously, it's just the way the universe works. So permaculture is a it designs. Now this is a one of the things that and I've been on a lot. I'm not going to mention any biologist's name, and I'm not picking on any biologist here, but I've been to a lot of them, and here's where I think people need to get pay attention. If you learn what we're getting ready to go over, what I would talk to a landowner about, these guys get paid around $3,000 a day to step out of the truck and look across your field. That's day one. Day two, you're paying them another $1,500 to $3,000 to ride around with you in the truck as you take them out to dinner and supper. That's day two. Day three, they're going to go over their little plan with you, which is another $3,000. We're up to $10,000. How many coon you got to catch for $10,000?
A heap.
Yeah, I mean, really, it is. And to someone that doesn't hasn't been in that world, that number seems like a whole lot. If I were to go and trap for somebody for 3 weeks, I'm keeping the fur, but I'm also getting paid close to $7,000 for those 3 weeks. So really the fur is irrelevant in the big scheme of things, if you follow what I'm saying. But that's the class, that's the reason I do what I do with these people.
And your trapping becomes a lot more fun.
It's
when you
a
do
lot
that.
More fun because it takes a lot of stress off of it. And your business model changes from a fur trapper. Because if coon's down, he needs to get coon out of there. You catch him, now it's a bonus. Now it's just, okay, I've caught 40 coon at $10 a piece. That's $400 bonus. You know, and that's, I want other trappers to do this. So
and everything falls into that permaculture business model side, just like permaculture is. So permaculture designs things. And in the agriculture side of permaculture, it doesn't just do with food. They design houses, it's your water systems, it's what do you want to do on the land, and there's zones in this land, which all that applies to deer management, but I don't know if anybody's really took it. And I picked up and I watched some of the QDMA member stuff, and I'm starting to see where people are selling chestnut trees and they're selling, you know, different things like that, which I'm tickled to death that they're doing. But it's not really a design principle. So when I go to some of these places for bow hunters like you, mm-hmm. well, that field you got out behind the house, and guys, I'm going to tell you, that's a nice size field out there. Mm-hmm. If a deer walks out and you see him out in the middle of that field with your bow, what are you going to do with it?
You're going to wave to him.
You're going to wave to him.
Right.
Really. Well, what I'm seeing from biologists, because they're thinking that they've got to train a landowner to be an agricultural farmer. They make fields just like mm-hmm. yours that's not designed for deer hunting mm-hmm. at all. So that is a negative in the 10th degree right there. So we can design these properties with a little bit of common sense and a little bit of creativity to find out what the landowner wants. Is it for, with his kids? Is it going to be for wounded warriors? Is it going to be whatever? If you really get in depth with this person, you can design his property using permaculture techniques mm-hmm. that's going to save him all this money and get him the deer. You know, kind of right. follow us in. Now, we're not going to... I only will do the number thing one more time. Mm-hmm. Okay. In the springtime, if it's really wet, does that screw you up?
Absolutely.
What do you do if it's wet?
If it's wet like it was this spring, we're out of the field, and we've got a late crop that won't yield as much.
Okay, so you don't tile here?
No tile in this part of the South.
Do you know what tiling cost, roughly?
I know it's enormous, but I do not know. I've been to other places that tiling is big. Pennsylvania, tiling's big. Ohio, tiling's big.
Kentucky, Iowa, it is. So, and if you don't know what we're talking about tiling, and since biologists are telling people to be farmers, if they're going to be wet when they need to plant their corn, so they got 4 months with no food out there in the field for the deer, they're going to put tiles under the ground. So this nasty substance called rain, when it hits the soil, they get it away from their farm as fast as possible. That's really what it is.
Right. Exactly. Absolutely.
You're treating rain like acid.
That's right.
Okay, now what do you do when it's dry?
In the springtime, same thing applies. If it's too dry, you don't have enough moisture to germinate your seed, and you've got to wait on the rain.
Or irrigate,
absolutely.
You got pivots.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, pivots are like $6 or $7 a piece.
That's right. They practically give them away.
And the whales are just like $10.
That's right. They give those things away. You're talking about enormous costs spread even over 25, 30 years would be the rough lifespan of one. And you're talking in the hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Okay, so all the costs we just did on for the having the corn is $250,000. Now you're throwing more zeros at me.
Right.
When I ain't gonna go there. I'm just gonna.
That's right. Let's treat our deer plot as dry land. It's dry land. We're gonna have to wait on the rain.
But do you know most places I've been to, unless they live where I live or places like me, like you probably get, how much rain do you get a year here?
I'm not exactly sure what our average is, and it fluctuates so much. I mean, but literally, we can be in a flood situation one year and an extreme drought situation the other. And I've seen both over the last 3 to 5 years.
Okay. Well, where I live, irrigation's not a big deal and tiling's mm-hmm. not a big deal, but we get about 56 to 58 inches a year spread out through the year. Mm-hmm. So it's very lucky.
I would think, and we're not that terribly far apart, and I would think that'd be comparable to what we are here.
Okay. But not an hour and a half from my house, I watched a biologist talk a dude into spending $75,000 to put a well in because the way that they've designed the fields to get the water off so they can get the crop in early because they know it's always wet in Tennessee in the spring. Mm-hmm. To get that off, he had to spend $7,500 because he treated water like acid. And when he needs the water, he's going to put it in his field. And where does it go? Straight through his tiles and back out to somewhere else. That, I mean, when you really think about it, there's not much common sense.
That doesn't make a lot of sense at all.
Annuals need about how much rain a month?
A good rule of thumb is 4 to 6 inches. To be honest with you, if I was guaranteed an inch rain every Saturday evening, I'd live in a happy world.
Right. So, well, most deer biologists have said they need an inch, exactly what you said, an inch a week. From when I say, and my wife's made me promise that I will say the terms I'm using, because I say them all the time, and you say them. Annual is anything that you plant and it dies.
Right.
Like corn,
right.
Soybeans, it's a seasonal right. thing.
You have to plant it annually.
And they have short roots
mm-hmm.
that don't go that deep, so they got to have that much rain to stay alive. Okay, so if I'm thinking, if I'm growing annuals, and I'm thinking as an entrepreneur, if I'm growing annual plants that have short roots that I can't go out and plant them if it's wet, and I may have to put money for tiles, and then when it's dry, since they don't have roots, I've got to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars or $100,000 to be able to irrigate these food plots, maybe annuals aren't the smartest thing mm-hmm. to feed a deer with. Because I've never been in your part of the country during a drought, but I bet if we looked at that tree line back there, it's still green and lush
mm-hmm.
when your plants are hurting.
Right.
Unless you're irrigating.
That's right.
Those are perennials, which... Mm-hmm. live on forever just like we do.
Right.
Most of them do, you know.
Right.
They have long tap roots, and no one had to water that back there.
Right.
True.
That's right.
Okay. So you've got all the costs we talked about last week, and now we're talking about water. And I see a huge problem from an entrepreneur that I can help somebody out with and go, you know, if we designed your land just a little bit different,
mm-hmm.
that it holds water and you don't let any water off your property until it absolutely has soaked up everywhere that you can put it, that would make more sense to grow it,
mm-hmm.
except for the tractors that you're using.
Right.
Because y'all are flat here. So we can design the ground. If we start, water's life. Everybody knows that. The closer you get to swamps and rivers, the more life there is, the more lush it is, and it right. always stays that way. So if you put swales in, if you understand what swales mm-hmm. are, and all that is a ditch on contour, which it's level all the way across,
mm-hmm.
which would be interesting for someone to design something for your fields because they're already flat. That would
right.
be interesting to me. But you could keyline that, which is way complicated for this show, but anybody can look that up and see how it's called keyline, and it started in Australia because they're drier than we are, and they're growing jungles over there with it. It's really amazing what they're doing. And you can design these things with swales, and you can put ponds in to hold water on that property if the swales get too full. And what that's doing with this design is it's letting all that water soak into the ground. So, you know, and I wish I had these calculations in my head, but if you had an acre of ground and it rained an inch, you're talking millions of gallons of water mm-hmm. hit that ground.
Mm-hmm.
But a conventional deer plot guy is being taught to get rid of the water and then water it.
Mm-hmm.
What if he kept those millions of gallons every single time it rained? Is this common sense
right.
making sense to
Absolutely.
You?
Absolutely.
And then if the annuals don't like, you know, if they don't handle variances in the water tables, maybe, like I said, that's a problem if you think about it outside the view and the box of agriculture. Maybe that's not the best thing. So
mm-hmm.
we go to perennials. Now, agroforestry, that's what I was trying to think of last week.
Mm-hmm.
Agroforestry. And that's something the University of Missouri, and anybody can look up the stuff they're doing. It's quite amazing. So if we design someone's property and they're a bow hunter. So mm-hmm. I know you and your wife and your son likes to bow hunt. And
right.
And you've got a deer out in the middle of this great big cotton field right now, and you're waving at it, and it's, you know, it's a 12-pointer, and it's 320 inches. It looks like an elk, but you're still waving at it.
That's right, because he's 320 yards away.
And you're with a bow.
Right, and I'm with a bow. That's right.
But what if we used agroforestry on your field, and we can fix the problem, because the problem's always a solution
mm-hmm.
in permaculture.
Mm-hmm.
There's two things you always hear. The problem's a solution, and it depends.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some depends on really flat ground, because I've never looked at it because I don't live on flat ground.
No.
So the problem is the deer's out in the field, and you're a deer hunter, and you planted that field, but you can't hunt the deer with your bow, and you're a bow hunter, so what's the purpose? Not very good. So right. The problem is you can't get to the deer.
Right.
Well, if it was next to a tree line, would you be able to hunt the deer?
Absolutely. And we do a lot of that on our non-productive areas of our farm in creating travel ways. And So what if those travel ways could stack functions and also be food sources?
I have to give you a hug if saying that.
And in between those travel ways, and travel ways are the key. They really are. And both from a deer management standpoint, which I'm absolutely not a professional deer manager. However, I study that quite a bit, and because I'm real interested in it, and I've got some nice deer that we raise here on this farm that we follow, and I do the whole game camera picture, the whole thing, and following from year to year to year, and watch the progression, and I also devise a way to harvest that animal when it gets to mature, and most of those involve one of two things, either food sources or travel ways, and I'm starting to kind of see, and as I said on last week's show, this is new to me. When Clint asked me to participate here, he said, I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions, and a lot of them are going to be about numbers of production agriculture, and would you be willing to help? And I said, well, sure I will. And he said, well, I got something real interesting. So it's just now for me, just like the guys listening to this radio show, starting to kind of come into full focus here. And I see where you're going, and I love the idea. And it makes a lot of sense, and it's got a ton of help value
to the deer guy.
Right. And it's also totally different than anything. Now, I've even worked with biologists here for different ideas. And some of them have good ideas, but they're based on food and travel ways. And so I'm starting to see where this is going. I really like what I'm starting to come into focus for me.
So I can see when you said, because we've talked about permaculture before.
A little bit, we haven't discussed this.
So if I was going to design your field, and let's say you still wanted, you were just dead set on doing cotton because you just love growing cotton. Well, what if we gave you, like, how far can you shoot your bow on a deer and feel comfortable?
40 yards. You say 40 yards.
Okay. That great big combine you got. Now, how wide is that thing?
It's 40 feet.
It's 40 feet. Okay. So we're good there. The reason I'm asking, because this is what I would ask if I was going to have a client, this is what I'd want to know. Mm-hmm. If he's a really bad bow shot, we're going to have to change what we're getting ready to say. But say 40 yards. Mm-hmm. So if it's 40 feet after the canopy, and this may sound, it's not as complicated when you really think about it, but you got to think of, we're going to plant chestnuts in rows in your cotton field. Mm-hmm. We're going to still let you grow your cotton. And while those chestnuts are maturing in those rows, you're going to lose a little bit of your cotton, but you're going to start gaining for something in the future, which is the best deer ground you've ever had. Because if someone just bought woods, they just can't go plant corn in there.
Right.
So, I mean, there's always a growth phase and stuff. We're going to plant these chestnuts. Now, in about 6 years, you can actually put a tree stand in a chestnut because they grow really, really fast. Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to do more than plant just chestnuts. You're using fertilizer on your cotton. Mm-hmm. Now, if you planted, because I've already asked you, if you have mimosa trees around here, and anybody in the South, those pink, the trees with the pink fuzzy things on the side of the road that we think are weeds, actually is like a bean and puts nitrogen in the soil. So God gave you a nitrogen fertilizer in a plant that costs you no money once you plant it. Mm-hmm. Black locusts, honey locusts, Siberian pea shrubs, all these are very easy to propagate. Mm-hmm. So you can keep your costs down. So we're going to have a row of chestnuts, and in between there, we're going to have these fertilizers.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're aware, but honey locusts are a deer magnet, too, at the right time of year.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely they are. Now, you got to use phosphorus for your crops. Mm-hmm. Well, permaculturist goes, we don't want to do the inputs because we want to build fertility, my fertility, a little different than your fertility. Mm-hmm. So we're going to grow comfrey. Mm-hmm. And if it was a big field like yours, we would go, okay, we're going to do the original comfrey that self-seeds. And inside those rows, within 2 years, you would have solid comfrey. Comfrey's got a root that's about 20 foot. It pulls up potassium. Their leaves don't have fiber like a regular plant, so they die back and they feed all the phosphorus your plants can do. So we got your fertilizer, we got your phosphorus, we got chestnuts, and chestnuts are an interesting thing. Chinese chestnuts put out about 5,000 pounds per acre of chestnuts, which is way more nutrition than your corn.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the cool thing about the chestnut, when I ask you what corn costs every year, you just said, you got to start over, right. You got to start over. Once you plant that chestnut and those mimosa trees out there in the comfrey, and you're doing your own self-fertilizer the way nature does mm-hmm. it, your inputs on that part of that is now over.
Mm-hmm.
It
mm-hmm.
takes over and it actually fertilizes itself with what we put there plus the leaves, and we're building organic matter to get that black dirt.
Mm-hmm.
So you're in the middle of this now, watching these trees grow, and you're still doing your cotton as long as we can get you to not use Roundup.
right.
So it doesn't overspray.
Exactly.
But we've got this running out through here, and we've already got a plant that if we planted an acre's 5,000 pounds, mm-hmm. which is 1,000 pounds less than your corn.
Mm-hmm.
Well, underneath that, we can plant hazelnuts,
mm-hmm.
which will actually kill between the comfrey and the hazelnuts and some other stuff we're getting ready to do for a landowner. They're going to be your own weed suppressor, and deer's going to absolutely love it
mm-hmm.
because food's going to be there a lot longer mm-hmm. than it will be for corn or soybeans. So we're going to have this row. We're going to put the hazelnuts under the bottom, or filberts, depending on where you're from. Mm-hmm. Those do about 2,000 pounds per acre. So between those two, if we want to get crazy, we've already kicked corn's butt.
Right.
But we don't have to plant it every year, and we don't have to put fertilizers and phosphorus on it because we're letting it do its own thing by now. Now, what else is something that I know you know this. What will drive a deer crazy in the woods in the South? Grows up trees.
Muscadines.
Muscadines. Muscadines, again, if you have one mother plant, you can plant thousands of them off that one mother plant in about 3 years because mm-hmm. they propagate super easy. So inside our chestnuts, we plant a row of muscadines on every chestnut tree or one of our, some people don't like doing their chestnuts and they put them in their nitrogen fixing trees, which is fine, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter. So those things put on way more than either one of the chestnuts or the, because I meant to look that up today and I've looked it up in the past, mm-hmm. but it's crazy on the tonnage.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're stacking chestnuts, hazelnuts, we've got our own fertilizers, and we're growing muscadines that, if you've ever grew muscadines, you better have a shotgun or a big fence. It's electrified because the deer's coming. Now in between those trees, because we're designing this, the chestnuts are really big for your tree stand, for the deer that you couldn't shoot in your field, but you can easily figure out where he's coming through and shoot in our field.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're putting this food there because that's the reason you planted the corn and the soybeans for deer, is for groceries.
Right.
Now, have you ever seen a deer around a persimmon tree?
Absolutely.
You know, persimmons are really cheap.
Right.
Bare root persimmons are really cheap, and they're not hard to graft. And all this is going to be another revenue stream for a business owner really quick. Mm-hmm. So now we've got chestnuts, hazelnuts, we got our fertilizers, we got muscadines down here, wild grapes up north, wherever you're going to be at, and now we're going to be putting in persimmon trees. And if you're farther north and about Virginia, no problem, we can put in Asian persimmon trees, which we would want to do anyway because they stay on the tree longer. So now they're going to start getting food from chestnuts about September, about like corn, and that's going to last now forever. And we're designing this to have max food. And if you still wanted to do annual crops in the middle because you just got to do it, you could still do it mm-hmm. as long as you didn't use Roundup and kill mm-hmm. everything else. Now, there's a thing called a jujube tree. Another one that's once you buy five or six regular plants and you learn how to propagate, which a monkey can propagate once they see how to do it, that puts an apple-looking thing on there. Because it's not something we eat. I grow them in my yard. And it looks like an apple. There's a ling and a lang. The ling will fall off like an apple in about October. It'll hit the ground. Everything, it's such a high sugar content, everything goes crazy over. It's like a persimmon. The other one dries on the tree and it'll stay on that tree till about January before it falls off. So now you've got, through design, we're feeding these animals now from September to January by what we planted with the less implements, and now we can bow hunt inside this field now. I'm stacking, you can see.
You know? You're also creating travel corridors. You're also creating cover. Cover's not all in and of itself a bad thing.
No.
But you're creating cover, you're creating travel ways, you're creating food. It's had another one on my mind. It's every one of these functions are complementing the other function.
Well, see, and another thing we talked about today, which I thought was interesting, you were talking about clover. Now, clover is an annual that reseeds.
Perennial.
I mean,
it's a perennial. In other words, so when you think annuals and perennials, you think how you plant them. If you plant an annual annually, you got to plant an annual every year. A perennial, multiple annuals, will last, you know, much longer. And what we actually were talking about is one thing that I do utilize for my deer on my farm is clovers. Now,
that can't be true because people plant clover every year. Why is that?
White clover. Most of your white clovers are the perennials. Most of your red clovers, like crimson clover, are annuals. And so different areas support the different clovers better. My higher, drier areas, planting red clovers, and I plant those every single fall. My lower areas, and what we were actually talking about, that one particular plot, and hopefully we'll have time to take a peek at that, is I planted this thing 11 years ago, and it's a little more expensive the first year. Actually, it's probably twice as expensive and maybe 2.5 times as expensive to plant that white clover the first time. I actually use Durana clover, but there's several other white clovers that follow the same suit. And I've done nothing besides run a bush hog over that food plot for 11 years running. So now which one's cheaper?
And it's high in protein.
Absolutely, it's high in protein, and it's evidently extremely palatable to the deer. They prefer that. I mean, I've got a couple of plots that I've got a low end of one that stays soggy and wet, and which is great for white clover. I've got a higher end that stays hotter and drier, and so maybe in the fall I've got both of them up and going. And they seem to prefer that white clover, seems to be more palatable to them than they prefer that over the red clover.
Well, see, now it's being tongue-in-cheek, because when I watch what people do on their deer things, they'll put clover out in the mix, and then they'll come through and they'll round up it to put something else in there. So they turned a perennial into an annual,
which
I've never understood.
Right.
So you've got between the hazelnuts, which makes a soybean look like it has no protein. It has so much in it. And you've got clover, you've got the groceries, and a chestnut is more like rice than it is a pecan or a hazelnut. Right. So it's high in carbohydrates like your corn. It's just corn on a tree is all it is. And you've got all that. But see, we can keep stacking trees with apples and pears. Now, someone's going to go, for me to plant that many apple trees is way too expensive. No, it's really not, because if you show somebody, and all these big land guys I'm talking about have a land manager. So every time someone eats an apple in his family or the owner's family, they put the core in a bag and they put it in the refrigerator. The landowner puts it in a bag, puts it in his refrigerator for 20 days inside a paper towel that's moist. When you open it 20 days, it's already germinated. You put it in soil and it'll outgrow a potted apple tree. It won't be true to form, but the deer don't care. And half of them are really good. Some of them aren't, you know. So, but it doesn't cost what people think it does. You can do the same with pears. I've never messed with peaches to do anything like that. But you can have so much fruit and food and nuts and protein and carbohydrates through that one time. Now, if you don't think you can get a landowner's attention with that, you're a terrible salesman. And the $250,000, if you gave a permaculturist on your farm $250,000, you wouldn't recognize it in 2 years. Because when we get into design, you'd start off with earthworks. You'd put the swales in to hold the water. You'd put the ponds in to hold the water. Or you would key lime it with a and it's probably something a farmer would be able to do. It's a deep digging one trench thing, but it doesn't really put dirt out. It just separates it, mm-hmm. and they put them on contour, but on every contour. And what the water does, it gets trapped on the land, and it's a zigzag, but it's only this wide. And I'm mm-hmm. showing him, it's like 4 inches.
Right.
You can drive over if you want to. And every about 10 years, you got to reopen them because the seal will get in there. So that, but they don't let any of the water off. You got all the food, you got all the everything they need. You're growing your own fertilizers mm-hmm. and everything else. And once you get it in, and it becomes, it actually becomes a forest inside of those tree lines, mm-hmm. there's really hardly anything else to do. You may go in there once or twice a year and do what we call chop and drop, and if something's just really getting in the way of something else, you chop it down. Mm-hmm. But you can get even crazier with deer. Have you ever seen deer around blueberries?
I have. And that was unwanted in my one episode of that. Very much unwanted. Actually, they may have hired a bow hunter.
Right. So. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy, but there's a bush, which is actually a honeysuckle. It's called a honeyberry. It comes on before blueberries. You got blueberries, and if you spread out your blueberries inside of your forest on the edge, the way they grow in nature anyway, you can have blueberries for 3 months. So really, we can be given food to these animals that far, and we're designing it for what they want it to do. Like if they were gun hunters, after being in Texas, you could build these food forests mm-hmm. for the deer in ways like senderos are in Texas.
Right, right.
Where your stand's going to be, you have these senderos going out and like a wagon wheel from there, and you got your clover in the middle, and you're done. Mm-hmm. And now, if someone was going to buy property, just, you know, mm-hmm. because you've got a lot of property. If you were in a deer situation and you went somewhere that they had all the food and it wasn't going to cost you $250,000 every 20 years to put these food plots in, which one do you think would actually have more value?
Absolutely, the permaculture would. And mm-hmm. it so much closely follows that deer and a clover example that I made a few minutes ago. I mean, the neat part about this and the difference is it's not costing, where Durana, the initial year to establish it, cost you maybe 2.5 times what the red clover will. But that's not the case in the permaculture. We've got $250,000 to work with here. Mm-hmm. And that $250,000 was spread over 20 years, but you're not going to spend anywhere close to that.
No.
You're just going to be fractional of that we're going to spend to establish this. And not to achieve the same results, but to achieve far, far better results.
Better results. And that's where, if someone really were to take the time to do this, and you got some people to let you try it, and once that first person got in about that fifth year, you would have to turn people off. You could not do it. But from a trapper's point of view, if he's smart, he's going to go, I don't really like me personally, I did not enjoy trapping in the Ozarks of Missouri. The ground sucks. There's no dirt. I mean, there's nothing. There are a lot of coyotes, but you can't snare. I mean, you know, so.
It's kind of harder to drive re-ride through those white rocks up there, too.
Yeah, but I can drop into southern Missouri mm-hmm. along the Mississippi River, and that is awesome trapping. Mm-hmm. And I want to do what I love, which is trapping. So I may, mm-hmm. push off the guy in the Ozarks and go to where I want to, because this is my business and my dream. My dream is I want to trap.
Right.
So I've got this really good person that I like, and I'm not having to take crappy ones, because once people see this, it's going to go nuts. And you're going to have so many years for the biologists finally give in. You're not going to care when they get into it anyway.
Right.
Because you're going to be the man. And there's enough room in this to have 50, 100, or 200 men, because there's thousands of deer biologists. Mm-hmm. They all say the same thing. They all get the same results. They all cost the same amount of money. And it's not helping the landowner at all.
Right.
Not really.
Right.
And that's when I was talking about, I think that is the biggest opportunity a trapper has to get the land he wants. Mm-hmm. And the clients that want to pay him, and he can make so much money in the summer, trapping becomes fun.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that's an awesome thing.
And my style of trapping, we just briefly mentioned that last week, but what I've got envisioned with these rows of food forest, albeit food forest for deer, and cover and opening, only enhances my trapping.
Oh, dude, you're right on it. You're letting them pay you to build the ultimate trapping location.
Absolutely. And for what I love to see a bobcat bouncing around as I'm approaching him on a check. And that would be perfect. That is exactly what I target and what I look for, along with sign and location, of course. Mm-hmm. But the location is much like the deer's travel ways. Mm-hmm. It's where can they find a mouse? Where can they find a rat or a squirrel or whatever they happen to be eating?
And when you start putting that much food on the ground, your prey species is going to go up.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's got places to hide. Your predators are going to come in right behind it. And as a trapper, like I said, you've let people let you design your ultimate trapping heaven in several different states or counties or however you want to do it. And you're getting paid mm-hmm. to use their money to build your trapping location.
And if you were the design mind behind this, who's that landowner going to give the permission to trap? Me, because he doesn't know me, I knock on his door and say, hey, I happen to be a trapper. Or you, because you designed this whole property. And so it's obviously going to be you. You're already in his wheelhouse. You're already almost part of his family because you helped him create what he loves to do. You're the man.
If you're doing your business right, he's going to know that you're in the predator control business.
Right.
But you only do certain clients.
Exactly.
You know, and you let him know that if he ever decides he needs predator work, since you did this design, you want to keep everything in equilibrium, he's going to pay you to trap.
That's right.
You know, he paid you to build the perfect trapping place. Now he's going to pay you to go trap it, and then you get to go sell the fur. It is, the more I think about it, the more, and I'm kind of, I'm not going to say I'm anti-college, you know, mm-hmm. because that's not really true, but I think the dogma part of college, I enjoy poking at it a little mm-hmm. bit.
Sure, sure.
And I know if you just get people to start asking questions, the biologists are gonna rooster up bigger than snot, and then you can come in and, I mean, with this knockout blow after knockout blow, and just from people talking, they're going to come to you.
Right.
It's different for deer biologists now because I'm just out of college. I don't, mm-hmm. you know, I hadn't been in all these magazines knowing who's in. You're taking crappy jobs for crappy money in places and people you don't like.
And you don't have a real skill set there. You know, I happen to have college degrees, but I'm also almost anti-college, but I'm very, very pro-education.
Mm-hmm.
And most of my education did not come from the college that I graduated from. I'm still real fond of the college I graduated from, and not to say that I didn't learn anything there. I did. But most of my education has come through things just like we're talking about, or somebody that knew more about something than I did that allowed me to hang out with them for a little while, and I learned our trial and error. And, you know, that's why I love the trapping so much is, you know, especially before the social media and the YouTubes and the Wolfer Nations and the trapper radios, and before I was in tune to all that, it was all trial and error. And sometimes that's kind of fun to learn that way. But so back to get on point, is most of these guys, especially when they're fresh out of school, they're only regurgitating what they saw in a book, and that book was probably written in the 40s or 50s or best case scenario up through the 60s that's not relevant for today.
I would say the name of the guy that started all the deer management, but I would probably my house a bit burnt down because biologists is worshiping. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, really. So, but see, now we're going to kick the entrepreneur mind in just a little bit more. And see, now this is the way I think about everything because it's the way I'm an entrepreneur. I can't help it. So if they need trees and honeyberry bushes in that. Now, what if you were to go figure out how to propagate, figure out how to grow stuff from seed the way I said with the apples where it costs you nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So if you sold something that cost you nothing mm-hmm. to a landowner for $5 a piece, that's drug money, because he's buying, I mean, he's just giving you $5 bills.
Right.
Really. Now, how hard is it for you to find, and here's where it's going to get really intriguing to people. Not only can he give you drug money for those apple trees and grafted and chestnuts you grow from seeds and the mimosa stuff you grow from seeds, so it's not, around here you just go dig it out of a ditch.
Right.
I mean, they're everywhere. But not only can you charge with a nursery because, okay, we need this amount of seedlings, and you know, and I know someone that grows the best seedlings in the world, and we happen to do that as part of our business. Would you like to come see our nursery?
Exactly.
Now, you're getting paid to trap, you're getting paid to design, and you're getting paid for the nursery part. Now, here's where it gets interesting in permaculture. There's a whole lot of people that get out of college with degrees and all kind of weird stuff, basket weaving and 17th century lesbian studies and all kind of stuff nowadays, that they don't know what to do with it. They want to go change the world. Now, if you've got a permaculture nursery that's really kicking, they will come work for you for absolutely free. They're called woofers, not woofers like coyote woofers, mm-hmm. but that's the nickname that permaculture's given them. So if you had a permaculture nursery and you were doing this on large scale, which is the goal of permaculture, you would have all the free labor. You would be turning down people left and right. Okay, so you're getting free labor, you're getting drug money on something that's not really costing you anything. You're getting paid to design and you're getting paid to trap.
And you got people begging to work for you.
You got people begging to work for you. And this is realistic, because right now people that do large scale permaculture, they're getting thousands of people wanting to work for free. You know, they stay on the place. You know, you help them with some food and they get a little stipend, but it's really for free.
And here's such a cool sideline to that. And again, I've mentioned this twice. This is all brand new to me, so I'm hearing this for the first time. But so, you know, maybe it's not for free. Maybe I see this business growing exponentially really, really quick. And you've got all these guys that you can pick the cream of the crop. Mm-hmm. And one thing, in dropping back, I'm much more comfortable in my role as an entrepreneur than I am a role of a business owner, but sometimes you have to be both. And one thing I really enjoy as a business owner and that side of things when I sit in that chair is treating my guys really, really well and making them extremely happy to work for me. Because what they're doing, I'd have to do it myself. That's the reason I hired them to start with. So if they produce enough for me and I can reward them and they're super, super good guys, that's the kind of guy I want on my team. And now you've got your pick from all these people mm-hmm. and you're making enough money that you can keep those guys extremely happy because they're making a good living too. Now you've increased the number of people you're helping
and you got the best.
To three or four, and you've got the absolute best.
Now, on the nursery part, this is where I don't think people quite understand. When you grow or graft, do you know what in a permaculture 4x8 raised bed with sand and compost, do you know what the value of that is to a nursery?
I don't, but I did some quick math when we were just in my head when we were talking about $5 for an apple tree. That seems really, really inexpensive to me. If you're planting $4,000 for a nursery, wow.
4x8 bed in the nursery, $4,000.
Wow. 4x8 grand. Well, that blows my mind.
So, I mean,
and so when you're selling these, when you first said $5, I said $5 and then I said, wait a minute, this guy's gonna need 400, 500, or 600 of these.
Thousands
of these. Wow. And what immediately popped in my mind is a $10 coon. Who gets excited about a $10 coon? But all of a sudden you've got 1,000 $10 coons, you get $10,000. Now we're talking about a little bit more grown-up money. If you're talking about a $5 plant, maybe that doesn't sound as exciting, but they're going to need thousands of these plants. Mm-hmm. And they see the value because it's not, what was our number? I know it was $250,000 over 20 years. Do the math, I forget exactly what our number was, but it was several thousand dollars per year. They're cheaper by buying from you and getting a much better product that's going to last much longer.
So the entrepreneur in me is going to go, okay, Chip, you want to grow big deer because mm-hmm. you've got, I mean, you're a hunter. There's no doubt in your mm-hmm. house. We're going to grow big deer. Now, this is what it's going to cost you, $250,000 over the next 20 years. And in the 21st year, you got to go buy the new tractors. You done burnt two sets of them up, and you're ground zero all over again. So we're going to do all this for you, and we're going to need to plant 10,000 trees.
Mm-hmm.
10,000 times five.
50 grand.
Now, for what he's putting in a tractor... And he's going to have to pay someone to put these in, but I mean, seedlings is nothing to put in. You put in literally probably 2,000 or 3,000 in a week, because you're talking small,
right?
Small. You can get into terrapins and you can get into all this other stuff, but I mean, you can see the value. And to him, you're following the permaculture principles. You're making that other person's life better. You're recycling seeds from an apple to give him better deer, or from a pear, or from anything else. And it could exponentially, where this could literally be for someone a $500,000 to $1 million business, easy. But we're not done. I mean, this is like, it sounds like an infomercial, but when your brain gets working like an entrepreneur, so you're selling him the plants and you've got woofers that want to go. Now, what if you were to tell him, you know, that old, what if we put a double wide on the backside? It cost you, if it was halfway decent, $60,000. Then we're still nowhere near what you're going to spend on your corn for only 20 acres of corn. We're doing this through property. We're going to put that back there. There's no way those deer can eat that much food. There's absolutely no way. These guys want to save the world, and they do. So they want to be part of something that you're doing. You can rotate out till you find the right one that you want to hire on. Now, what you want to hire him for is because you're producing five times what a commercial agriculture person's growing on your land, and maybe you want to get paid for the money you've spent in this land besides just the deer, because chestnuts are huge. You know, a quart of blueberries costs what's a bushel of corn go for?
Nowadays, $350, $375.
Okay. A pint of blueberries is what you do for a bushel of corn. A pint of blueberries is equal, you know, and I can get three of those off of a three-year-old blueberry bush.
And a pint of blueberries can't be, what, a pound maybe? Or a pint? Maybe no,
they're not even a pound,
half a pound, maybe.
Yeah,
and a bushel of corn weighs 56 pounds.
So, yeah, I mean,
for the same money.
Now, and when you start now, you're helping this person out so much that you're going, your place is going to be such a showpiece that we can bring people here that will harvest what the deer don't eat. And y'all will come to an agreement on what that is that you want to leave for the deer. There's going to be way more than they can harvest and way more than the deer can eat. Because if you were to plant all that back there with everything we just said, you would literally have 20, 30,000 pounds of food per acre. I mean, you know, they can't eat that much.
Right.
So now what if we sold those high dollar organic or beyond organic permaculture grown local in whatever your biggest city is around here for that.
Right.
And the landowner's going to go, well, how much would that be? Well, I don't know. Let's just do some figuring. And we would do exactly what we just did. So in other words, we're going to pay for your land. We're going to pay for all your trees. And at the same time, because you're helping him so much, you're getting paid to trap, design, grow stuff. And if you're smart about it, somewhere you'll be getting 5 or 6% of this harvesting that's going on side, so you've got a different revenue stream. And do you know the agriculture part of this is real tricky in taxes? Do you have a guy that specializes in that?
I do.
Well, you do, but to a landowner that you're talking to, now you get 20% of what this really high-powered CPA is charging, and you can just go round and round and round. But that's the way an entrepreneur thinks. And that's how people get out of, I need to go catch 300 coon this month to pay house payment.
Right.
And that's the way I want all trappers to be. I want trappers to be, like LT Gray, which you probably never met from Ohio, he traps moles in Cincinnati in a freaking Mercedes Benz. That's the way I want to see all trappers trapping, Mercedes right. and Beamers.
Right.
You know, and they're paid for.
Well, this takes you from the point, and here's the, I'm an optimist by nature, but I've just been in business long enough that I look for the holes. I look for, okay, so why won't this work? So why is that really that number? Yes, that's real numbers that we were discussing. That came off my budgets right here that I work with every single year. These are real numbers. I don't see any reason that any part of that would not work. But what it will do is take you, and I love trappers and I love trapping and I love the whole world about it. But there's so many guys out there that are struggling for that $300 to make the mortgage payment, pay the rent. Those guys are out there. It changes your family tree, and it can do it in a short order of time. This done over, don't even give it the 20 years, give it 5 years. You know, the first year you're going to make some money. The second year it's going to grow exponentially. I don't think by the third year, I think you'd be turning away more people. I don't think advertising will be a part of this because
and some trappers are going to get mad when they're going to, you know, I haven't taken a new client in trapping in 6 years. I'm full. I make plenty. Now I'm getting at the point where, like in this business model, let's go trap mountain lions in Texas. I don't care what they bring. I just want to go mountain lion trapping. Or let's go bear trapping in Maine. Or let's go mink trapping in southern Louisiana. That's where, you know, but because of some other stuff that I've done inside of models, not what we're talking about, but very similar, where I stack all this stuff together, it allows me to go back to do what I love and not have to strain so much like I used to.
Right.
And I guarantee you, if we set up with a pot of coffee, we could do this in three different ways and three different things that trappers could do. But that's the way an entrepreneur thinks, and that's the way I wish trappers would think.
Right.
Because, you know, when I talk about how I make money in Texas, I guarantee you that probably shocked a lot of people about how that I stack money.
Right.
But everybody should be doing maybe not exactly what I'm doing,
sure,
but something.
Sure, absolutely. And it's so real is what just blows me away, especially at the onset. Every bit of that can be done. And
I don't even think what we're talking about is would be that hard.
It's not complicated. You know, and this is probably way oversimplifying, but it's a system is what it gets to. And it's a system that's, you can go on and on. But this is a system that helps people. It's a system that once you get the system down, it's no difference than, you know, my system of trapping off my buggy. My hammer's in the same spot every single time. I understand the system. I know the system. And it stacks so nicely on top of each other that, I mean, the benefits are endless.
Well, we're going to close. What's our time on our second show? Okay, we're going to close. But if someone's interested in permaculture, agroforestry is it's almost like a bunch of permacultures got together and figured out a way to trick a university in Missouri. Because permaculture, there's a lot of weird, and if you've seen online, there's a lot of weird hippie talking to the moon and bunch of garbage. I mean, there's a bunch of that out there. But the design part of that is where it rocks and rolls. Now, you can go to some of the best places in the world for PDCs, and in permaculture, PDC is a permaculture design course. For about $1,000 in 10 days, they will tell you how to do everything that I just, you know, rattled off quickly. Mm-hmm. And if someone was really interested in this, they'd probably go to about three of them and talk to the person about what they're doing. Because, you know, and what really set this off is someone asked me a couple of years ago about, well, if you like growing all that stuff and it does all this good, why don't you go talk to Shell or BP?
BP.
BP.
Right.
if you could put these principles in place around their thing, what do you think that would do to their standing in the world's eyes? They could spend $1 billion on you to do exactly what we're talking about around every one of their rigs and pumps, mm-hmm. where the world would be so much better around there than what it is. It would be nothing to them to spend $1 billion on doing that. Well, I really don't want to deal with the oil companies, but I do like the clients that I trap for.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that got me thinking, well, you know, that might work for the oil companies, which mm-hmm. is an ideal for somebody. Mm-hmm. You better be a heck of a salesman to get in the door, but it would work if you could get
right,
in there.
Right.
Or you went to Walmart and go, you know, I live in Podunk, Dunlap, Tennessee. Why don't we make you the rock star of all the people that hate you? And we're going to, if we can talk to our local government, which I'm sure they'll be happy to you to donate this money, and we're going to turn, we're going to have these systems in place in our town, and you're going to be the one that's donated the money to show us how we can all live a better life, and all the people that hate you right now won't be able to hate you.
Right.
So that's an entrepreneur thinking. And Walmart, if you could get to the right person, they would probably look at that and go, how much do you need? About 6 million. They'd look around and go, that ain't much. That's cheap advertising.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but everything that documentaries been right. made. But these PDC courses aren't expensive.
Mm-hmm.
$900 to $1,500.
You go. If you had to get three of them, that equals the first time your biologist steps out of your truck.
That's right. That's right. Now we're going to take it one step further, because I could keep going. I mean, I really could, because I've mm-hmm. thought about this so much, and I'm keeping some stuff to myself. Mm-hmm. But I really hope, people do this. If you did that on three farms, you would force universities to do a study on it. And once you force that study, you would be, you can plug in whoever your famous deer biologist is right now, you would be 10 times more status than they are. Now, what does that give somebody that pulls this off? You can write books.
It gives them the need for an airplane pilot to make all those speaking engagements.
It would. You'd be getting paid to go talk to people. People and the clients that I'm talking about would probably spend $2,000 to come to one of your clients' place and see this while you explain these systems to them and answer their questions and do all that. You could make $50,000 in a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this would mean to the people that pull it off and do a good job.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're talking, now how much trapping could you do? I mean, seriously.
And not trapping for the house payment, but trapping. Like, I love to trap.
Yeah.
I tell you, I'm a hobby trapper. I do it because I want to, because I love to do it, because that's what trips my trigger. That's that I you know, I just, the whole idea of outsmarting out, but I do it for fun. And I love it so much. And I talk to some of these guys that are professional, and I hear interviews, and you hear struggles after struggles after struggles. And you know, and it's kind of like we alluded to earlier. I mean, it's not the dread anymore. Now it's the fun stuff again, and it's all the way back to, you know, just freeing you up to enjoy what you do.
Because mm-hmm. when you plant and grow and do your nursery and design, it's the time of year that you're not trapping.
Right, right.
So, I mean, it's just like the pool business. If someone went down mm-hmm. that route,
mm-hmm.
you're in a business that you can make good money when you're not going to be trapping, so you got plenty of money to go enjoy trapping.
Right, right, right.
I mean, it because they mesh perfectly.
Exactly.
Except I think with the deer people, you just got a lot better shot because they're going to pay you to trap.
That's right.
You
that's
know?
Right.
So you don't see, honestly, you don't see anything I said that just seems like it's hocus pocus.
I don't. But the one and only hole I see this is going to be treated, but these are your clientele. And you mentioned this as we started. This may not be... And this is not a replacement at all, I don't think, for production agriculture.
No.
Now, we had to use production agriculture to get real numbers, and these are real efficient numbers that I use. This is buying in bulk. This is buying in volume. But I mean, I may raise 3,000 acres of corn next year, and so I have the luxury of buying a little bit cheaper than the you may buy for your deer farm, because you're only buying 20 acres.
Mm-hmm.
So... if anything, our numbers are going to be a little bit on the, you know, on the lower side of things, and that's what we based them on. So it's not a replacement for the reason that we brought the production agriculture in is because we had to have a basis for our numbers to gain real numbers there. I think the fit here is exactly for your client that you identified earlier. He's the guy that's got money, he's got property, and he's looking for a manager that makes sense. Not necessarily a manager with a lot of names and numbers behind their name, but a manager that makes sense. And mm-hmm. you know, and if I got a guy approach me and says, hey, I just graduated with a PhD in whatever, and I've got a guy that's been doing this for 25 years or even 5 years, but is extremely successful, the PhD didn't mean a whole lot to me mm-hmm. at that point. The proof on the ground means a lot to me.
It really does. And it's, I mean, do I wish all, you know, commercial agriculture would go more towards the way that I think that it should be? Yes. But that's, you can only change what you can change. Mm-hmm. But in my mind, you know, because Cindy's like, are you sure you want to put this on the radio? Because this is, you know, and she's very detail orientated. Mm-hmm. She's tried every way she could to go, well, it won't work because of this. Mm-hmm. She can't do it. Right. I mean, she knows what I'm saying, and she can't figure out a way to shoot it because she's thinking of as devil's advocate.
Right.
And she goes, would you really want to do this? Put this on the radio, because what if 10 people do it? I'm like, well, I'm gonna be disappointed. I wish 100 people would do it. She goes, well, what if you're doing it? Do you know how many you couldn't in Texas? You could drive for 9 hours and never get out of a deer people,
mm-hmm.
and that ain't counting Mississippi or the whole country.
Right.
It thousands of people could do exactly what we're talking about doing. Thousands.
Absolutely.
And they
and never step on toes.
Yeah,
never cross paths.
There may be there's always
mm-hmm. sure.
little fiefdoms and stuff, but I mean, realistically, and you know, and the what we're talking about, I mean, how many clients do you really need?
Exactly. You couldn't handle many.
No. I mean, you really couldn't. You would just be like a pig in crap mm-hmm. all day mm-hmm. long. You know, And like I said, I wish trappers were trapping out of Mercedes and Beamers and their houses were paid off.
Right.
You
right.
know, that's the way that I wish. And something like this being a little different, maybe mm-hmm. completely different, but thinking this way, trappers can trap in Beamers if mm-hmm. they wanted to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, this is more than grown-up money, what we're talking about.
Oh, yeah. It really is. Well, man, we've been rambling on now for, it's late here. It's 12 o'clock. So,
wow.
I appreciate it.
Okay.
And thanks for, you know, talking your numbers with you because, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes if you start talking money, it gets a little squirrely. But
mm-hmm.
but I really appreciate you doing
yeah.
that.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it. It's given me something to think about, and I look forward to kind of mulling over this for the next few weeks myself. I've already got some plans of even if I didn't, and actually I've got a lot of thoughts I want to think through, but if nothing else, on my farm, on the areas of my farm that I deer hunt, I've got a lot of things that I want to do. I may put an apple core in the refrigerator tonight.
So. Mm-hmm. Cool, man.
So, good deal.